Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Addicts Advocate. I am your host, Dusty Dean, and it is my pleasure to welcome back Counselor Mike. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Dusty. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on again. Always appreciate your knowledge and insight. We've been discussing recently, there's a lot of myths surrounding sobriety. A lot of people are afraid to become sober because they think life's going to be boring. But I know that you have a lot of insight on this, and I know that you've come up with a list of some things that are really big myths regarding sobriety that hopefully will take the sting out of the fear of becoming sober, not feeling, accepted in social environments anymore, feeling like they're going to be able to still function in society, right? And I think that's important. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and let you start this off.
All right. So there is a myth out there. It's floating around. It's been floating around for quite some time that an individual absolutely has to hit rock bottom before they reach out. That's totally a myth, and it's a very dangerous one. How I would submit to you that a person can reach out at any time on this downward slope of addiction. They do not have to hit rock bottom. Can you imagine, as manipulative as addicts and alcoholics are, they can always rationalize that I'm not as bad as the other guy. I haven't got as low as they have. So I can actually rationalize that I don't have a problem. So why would I reach out if I'm not as bad as that person that's a skid row bum in the gutter? But that is a myth. A person can reach out at any point in time. In fact, I will submit to you that the higher success ratios are when a person is able to reach out in the early stages of their addiction or their substance use disorder, as opposed to hitting rock bottom. So that is one that we absolutely need to get out there, that a person at any time in the addiction process, as they're sliding down this slippery slope, they just reach out and say, hey, help me.
So that would propose I would propose that being at the rock bottom is even just, it's a more dangerous reality, right? I mean, if you're going to hold off, you're going to do a lot more damage to yourself in that process.
That's great.
And then also the likelihood of a relapse, that becoming even more dangerous, I think is a bigger reality, right? So
absolutely.
If you nip it in the bud, I think you're better off.
Absolutely. And if there is a rock bottom, let's raise the rock bottom up. Let's raise it up so we can really help the person.
What else you got for me, Mike?
All right. So there's this one that my colleagues will probably give me some pushback on. We've heard this in the rooms: once an addict, always an addict. So I would submit to you that's not true. Now, I'm probably going to get a lot of negative feedback about that, but I'm going to take a risk, right? So I'm going to do it this way. So in the Navy, I used to teach how to fight a fire. So you fight a fire, the fire is out. The scene leader comes back to me and says, Chief, the fire is out. I said, okay, we posted over the 1MC, the public address system on ship. Fire is out, fire is out, fire is out. But I'm going to post a reflash watch at that fire scene for at least 24 hours to make sure there's not any embers still that we haven't detected that can reflash the fire. So after 24 hours, that scene leader is going to come back to me and say, Chief, the fire's been extinguished. At that point, that fire is completely out. It has no chance of reflashing. So now let's transport that to recovery. So a person's been working on their addiction, whatever they did it, they went to treatment, they have a plan, they've been working on it. They haven't had, they're addressed their triggers and their cravings. They've done a really good job. Now they're in a point in their life where they don't even think about using as a way of coping with stress or trauma or pain. Doesn't even come up. They don't even think about drinking or using to deal with that. So I would propose to you, if that's true, and it doesn't come up out of their lizard brain where their addiction lives, but it no longer comes up there, right? And the mammal brain is in charge completely, and they don't have any cravings, they don't have triggers, and they're living their life as a clean and sober person. And they've been doing this for 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 15 or more years. I would propose to you that their addiction has been extinguished. It is done. And at that point, would you say to that person, hey, you know what? You're still an addict. No. in every way, shape, or form, internally and externally, they're showing us that the addiction is no longer active. So are we really doing them a justice by saying, you're still an addict, dude? It's just that your addiction has gone stagnant. You still have it. I would propose to you that in some cases, and I've seen it happen, that person has extinguished the addiction. It is no longer active, and it's not in a dormant stage at all. It is gone. Now, that might cause a lot of discussion, but I'm going to take a risk out there because I've seen people that where they act in every way, shape, or form as if they don't have the addiction anymore. In other words, their brain, which was hijacked, has been returned to the pre-addiction state where everything is back to homeostasis. So what would you say? If they took a PET scan of the brain and it looked exactly like their normal brain did prior to them being addicted, what would you say to that? I would say that the addiction has been extinguished.
I like it. I like it. So I want to pose a question to you regarding this myth. I've just through the community, the sober community, I've heard lots of stories of those that have gone 5-6 years and then all of a sudden starts up again. And it usually I find that it starts because there's this feeling of I've recovered. And so I'm now back in control. And what ends up happening is that two drinks one night become two drinks three nights, becomes four drinks three nights, becomes 5 to 6 drinks every night. And they fall back into that cycle. How would you respond to that?
Okay. That was a very good question. Because I'm an ex-Navy man, right? And I'm going to do it in a kind of a nautical kind of term, but I think people will understand. A ship that's moored to the pier has 6 mooring lines connecting it to the pier so it can't drift off. Now, those mooring lines keep the ship in place. So in recovery, mooring lines might be, I have a sponsor. Another one is, I work the steps. Another one is, I go to therapy. Another one is, I go to the gym. Another one would be, I have a relapse prevention plan. So as long as those mooring lines are intact, that individual is going to maintain their sobriety. Now, if one of those mooring lines snaps and it gets damaged or something happens, okay, maybe 1 out of 6, not a problem. 2 out of 6, it's getting a little bit dicey. 3 out of 6, half of the mooring lines are gone. So basically what is going on is that individual is no longer doing the things that were helping them to establish and maintain their sobriety. So now they've let go of the things that have got them to where they are now. So in that case, they need to re-implement the mooring lines, all the connections that they had to get them to that place. They need to reestablish them and then continue on their journey.
Okay. I like it. And I do think that from other people in the sober community, those that have been struggling with it, is that the ones that get all this knowledge and utilize those mooring lines, if you will, there's a major mental health perspective that is never addressed. And so they end up snapping all those mooring lines instantaneously. And then within a day, they're frantically throwing them back on to shore themselves up again. So they know what they've done. They couldn't help themselves, but they know what they did. They refix it, but it becomes kind of a cycle like that because they're afraid to address their mental health, afraid to get medications that may help stabilize them. And so, you know, that I think is an important part of it as well.
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. What other myths you got for me, bud?
All right. So sometimes we're asking someone to not only address their primary drug of addiction, or we call that drug of choice. Actually, let's get rid of that drug of choice misnomer. Nobody chooses to be addicted, right? So their drug of addiction, what they're addicted to. Well, now on top of that, we ask a person, okay, you're now in a program. You're going to stop using cocaine. You're going to stop eating sugar. You're going to stop drinking sodas with caffeine in it, and you're going to stop smoking. Now, how successful do you think that individual is going to be when we ask them to not only stop their drug of addiction, but to stop everything else simultaneously at the same time? What do you think that the success ratio of that would be? I think I don't have the stats, but I think it's very minimal. So this is what I'll say. The myth is that an addict should be able to, or an alcoholic should be able to work on all of their disorders at the same time. No. I will say to you, and I would submit, that any person only has enough finite energy and focus to focus on one addiction at a time. So the one that is threatening to kill me is the one I address first. Cigarettes will not kill me right away. Alcohol and heroin and cocaine could kill me today. So I'm going to address the disorder that threatens me the most. And maybe for right now, alcohol, if I have one more drink, could kill me. So I'm going to address the addiction that is threatening my life the most. The other ones can wait. By the way, sugar is not going to kill me today. It might kill me 20 years from now if I keep eating sugar and I become diabetic and not taking care of myself, but it's not going to kill me right now. Whereas other illicit drugs and even prescription medications pose an immediate danger. So let's not ask a person to stop all of it at the same time, because their success ratio is going to be dismal. Let's ask them to address the one that is causing them the significant risk of detriment to their health, their emotional state of mind, their mental state of mind, their physicality, and everything else. So let's do that and not ask a person to do too many things at once.
I like it. I know that you had brought up another myth just about, you know, willpower, right? That yeah. this should be something of willpower. And I know that, you know, the unwitting individual who's trying to get clean, trying to get sober, the worst thing that they can do, because they're probably not going to realize that that's what they're doing, but they're talking to normal people that don't battle with addiction. So when those people are from the outside looking in, simply just say, well, this is just a matter of willpower. You can quit if you want to, just quit. I think that's dangerous. And it's also, I think it increases guilt and shame in those that are suffering, that are trying to get clean.
Yes.
So, okay. What else? You got any other good ones for me, Mikey, or are we good?
Well, I would say this one last thing, right? There is a thought that only illegal drugs are dangerous. So I would submit to you that alcohol kills more people per year than all the other illicit substances put together. So we have 88,000 deaths per year that are connected to alcohol, and alcohol is legal. Nicotine is legal, and it kills 1,500 people a day. So the myth is that only illegal substances are dangerous. No, actually, it's the other way around. It's illegal substances, because not only are they legal, but they're accessible. Whereas the person, I've never been in a supermarket where walking down the aisle, I can buy cocaine. I've never been to a supermarket where I can get kratom or heroin or PCP. When I'm walking down the Safeway aisle, right? But I can alcohol. And not only is it readily available, but it's legal. So let's get rid of that myth that only illegal substances are dangerous.
I like it. And I'm gonna leave with one parting myth that I think is very powerful, because I think this is what scares a lot of people as well that are contemplating sobriety, and that is that life sucks when you're sober. And the reality of it is that it does not suck. Pretty stinking awesome. I've found that my life has gained tremendously in my sobriety, and it's been just a short period of time. And it's made me present. It's made me looking forward to the future. And it's made me just, I think, my spirit harmony, my presence of mind, all those things have just been massive blessings. So, counselor, I appreciate your time as always, sir. And I thank you again for your time. And this is Dusty Dean with the Addicts Advocate. Please make sure you like and subscribe, and join this empowering community where we continue to provide you with good feedback on your sobriety journey. Take care.
Thanks, Dusty.